Hello and welcome to Boring Beige Box, the weekly podcast about retro computing. I'm your host, Matt Wilson. If you like to hack away at your autoexec.bat or config.sys files just so you can play King's Quest or Ultima, you're at the right place. From 2400 baud modems to IBM PS1s, to Monkey Island 2, to the Sierra Network, we cover it all if it happened in the 80s and 90s. So clean out that garage, pull out that old boring beige box, and let's have some fun. Welcome to Boring Beige Box. This is show number 2 for April 21st, 2006. Today's topic is online services of the early 1990s. Our website is www.boringbeigebox.com. For today's show notes and any of the links that I talk about today, you can go to our website and click on podcast info. We also have forums on our website. You can go directly to that by going to forums.boringbeigebox.com. And I definitely encourage you to jump on there and talk about whatever you're interested in regarding retro computing. There's a lot of different sections that you can get into there, and I think you'll enjoy it. Also, you can email me directly at podcast@boringbeigebox.com. Well, I'm glad you're here today. Thanks for tuning in. It has been a pretty busy week. I am very excited about the new podcast. I've had a lot of response. There has been numerous people that have downloaded the show, the first show. I'd say a couple dozen. And that's been really good because this is my first time doing this. But I'm really, really excited about it. So today was a good day. I've just been kind of relaxing around the house, thinking about what I'm going to talk about in today's show. The whole week I've actually been pretty much preparing for today's show. It takes a lot of time to put in the research and really to think about what you want to talk about. But I think that you're really going to enjoy today's topic. Today we're talking about the online services of the early 90s. Now, let me kind of take you back to this time period. During the early 90s, it was a transitional period before the internet really came about, or actually the web portion of the internet, going to websites, that idea, hadn't really happened yet. Kind of the timeline is that during the 80s, there were bulletin board systems that were very popular with home users, but we started off with a idea of online services. Even in the early 80s, this started out. There are four online services that I want to touch on today. CompuServe, Prodigy, the Sierra Network, which later became known as Imagination Network, and America Online. Now, during the... Let's first talk about CompuServe. During the early 80s, CompuServe was at the forefront. CompuServe now was started as early back, and this is pretty amazing to me. I didn't know this until I really read more into CompuServe. CompuServe was started in 1969. It was through phone lines that people dialed into the old PDP-8s, PDP-11s. There's a really good article on most of the stuff I'm talking about today. There's really good articles on Wikipedia about these different online services, just a wealth of information about these different online services. So CompuServe really was one of the earliest online services. And later on, it was bought out by H&R Block, you know, who does your taxes. They do my taxes. And they really turned it into a service for business people and other professionals that wanted to access online information. During this time, I would say probably during the mid-80s is really when CompuServe was at its peak. You could buy... You buy an account, or you go into a store and you would buy the boxed product for CompuServe. Install on your computer, you're good to go. It was very expensive. I'm looking at, I have a actual, looks like an intro guide or booklet or pamphlet for CompuServe. And it looks like to actually buy the CompuServe package, it was $39.95 just to buy the kit. Now they gave, it looks like they gave you a $25 credit to start off with, but it was very expensive. I think that it was at one point, from what I'm looking at this document, it's $7.95 a month, but then they charge you by the hour, and I think that some places were as high as, if you're not in their network or you had to dial long distance or you had to dial out of their network, it was as high as $30 an hour. That's insane. It was really crazy. I can't believe that some of this stuff was so expensive. Now, I think it had basic services for $7.95 a month, like email and access to the forums and stuff like that, and basic information. But from what I'm looking at, they had certain connect rates, and actually this is what's pretty nuts. I think for the extended or premium services, you paid based on the hour. If you had a 300 baud modem, it was $6.30 an hour. 1200 or 2400 baud modem was $12.80 an hour. 9600 baud was $22.80 an hour. Now that was their premium service, so it was very expensive. I'm amazed at this, how expensive stuff was. But you paid by the hour. For CompuServe, the big selling point for CompuServe was the forums. They had a lot of tech support forums for different vendors. The forum community was really, really big on CompuServe. I remember using CompuServe very, very briefly in the early 90s. It was for the businessman. It was for the professional. It was for a more adult environment. I remember not enjoying it very much because the information was great, but it seemed clunky. It seemed out of date. They had very weird, I think like your email address was like your account number. It was like 18657,1176@compuserve.com. It was awful. I mean, it was really cryptic. But the force of CompuServe really existed in the 80s, in the mid-80s to late 80s, and then maybe the early 90s. But like I said, it really started off as a business person's online service. You could get, you know, news and weather and a lot of great information. You could book travel, stuff like that. But it was very expensive. And so during that time, I think that most home users didn't really use that. The people that were into computers and getting online during the mid-80s, they were connecting either to bulletin board systems, you know, BBSs, with just terminal screens and downloading files that way, or either they were using, I know that, and I'm going to get into this later, but there was a service called Quantum Link, which started in the mid-80s for the Commodore 64. And actually, Quantum Link was America Online before it changed over to America Online. Steve Case was a part of Quantum Link. So people were using some of that. You know, Quantum Link became that real, like a personal environment, a personal home user-based online service. So there really wasn't a lot going on. Now, like I said, I didn't use CompuServe a lot, but that was kind of the forerunner for a lot of the online services. Then I think probably the next online service that became real popular was, and now this also, like I said, was during a time when Quantum Link was there, but it was not for IBM PCs. It was just for Commodore 64s. The next service that I want to cover is Prodigy. Prodigy was launched in 1988. This online service, and a lot of you probably, you know, you remember Prodigy. CBS and Sears decided to create this online service called Prodigy. Now, Prodigy came packaged with a lot of PCs at the time, like the IBM PS1 and the Packard Bell. And also, it came bundled with the Hayes modems. If you remember the Hayes modems, they are, you know, late 80s, early 90s, 2400 baud, 9600 baud modems, and even the 1200 baud modems. Prodigy was great. I used Prodigy, I think, as early as 90 or 91. A friend of mine, and this is another PC that I really want to get into and talk about, the IBM PS1. It was an all-in-one system. I don't know if you remember, but when it started up, it had a four-quadrant screen. It was a really small computer. It was kind of IBM's idea of getting into the home user market. It was easy to use. And I remember that Prodigy came with it, bundled in the software. And I was at my friend's house, and he had a Prodigy account, and I was blown away. It was incredible. You know, you could get online, you could read different bulletin boards, you could shop online. I was just a kid. I didn't want to buy anything or do anything like that. But it was pretty neat because you could go shopping, you could buy flowers or, you know, different items. You could book online travel, and you could send email. Email was incredibly cool. Prodigy was the first one I think that I really used. I really kind of got into the whole online services. That was before I even had my own home computer. I bought my first computer. It was a 386 in 1992, summer of 92. So this was Prodigy. Getting into Prodigy and stuff was before that, before I had my own computer and I'd go to a friend's house. So I'd say 90 or 91. So Prodigy was pretty neat. It was DOS based, and if you remember it, it was all graphical interface, but later on it became very cheesy looking. It was, you know, like 16 color, blocky graphics, you know, pretty cheesy, but it was great. I love Prodigy. I have the actual box. I have two boxes that I've collected from Prodigy over time. It was, if you remember, it was kind of like an orangish, like yellow box. It had Prodigy. The logo was like a star. And there was real colorful books that came with it. Like the stuff I see here, I have. It came with the 5 1/4 floppies, of course, and the 3 1/2 inch floppies. But it's real funny. On the front of the box, it has, you know, stock photos of people saying really cheesy quotes like, for us, it's fun, a real part of our home entertainment, or it's a great value for our whole family. And, this is the best one here. This is what so many... Okay, the difference between hardcore computer users, I would say people, you know, your hacker type or your person that's really into computers in the 80s were people that were very proficient at electronics, or they were hobbyists, or they're really spending a lot of time. The personal computer market in the 80s, personal computers were very difficult, I think had a sharp learning curve because of how basic they were. So your hardcore people in the mid-80s were people, you know, you connected to bulletin board systems. It was tough to use personal computers at the time. And I know that there was people that got computers and learned how to use them that knew nothing about computers, but the mass amount of people, I think, didn't happen really until like America Online came. But this is kind of the beginning of it with Prodigy. On the front of the box here, it has a picture of a lady, and it says, she's quoting, it goes, "I don't know how to use a computer, but this is so easy." And that's that right there. And then, well, there's another guy on the back. It's a real cheesy kind of dad looking character. It says, in quotes, "I didn't have a reason to use my computer. Now I have hundreds." So, you know, it's the whole idea of people just got online just to, that's all they did. They just got online. They got a computer just to get online. Get on, you know, on the internet or online. That was the big thing. You know, I'm sure that they use a computer for other things, but even how we've moved into the 90s and the whole advent of the web and the internet until today, people get computers, I would say home computers today, just because they want to get online, just because they want to get on the web, they want to do email, they want to go to websites, they want to do instant messaging, that's it. I mean, there's other things that people do to write reports, and if you're in high school and stuff, and write papers, and maybe to play games, but most games now, the computer game market has gone to the crapper. I mean, it really, nowadays, everything is about the console system for kids. So, you know, this was a time when it really started where people wanted to get online. So that's Prodigy. Prodigy was really cool. I definitely enjoyed that. Prodigy pretty much went downhill after America Online. And this is both for CompuServe also. America Online killed CompuServe and Prodigy, I believe. Prodigy was real popular because it came out on the market in 1988. It had a good run until AOL started to become really powerful. Same thing for CompuServe. CompuServe raised its rates. Prodigy had a real crazy pricing. They at one time Prodigy was charging 25 cents. You got 30 emails for 1 month each month, and then after that you had to pay 25 cents per email. Imagine paying a quarter for every email you send. That was nuts. It was really the early days of online services. I mean, I can't imagine someone you having to pay for email now. So Prodigy fell to that. I mean, they just had a lot of, you know, bad mistakes, bad choices. Now, they did become a true ISP, Prodigy Internet Services, and I actually used them for a while, and they were very good. You know, they used they had lots of local numbers to call, so I'd call in for just typical dial-up service, which was great. They were actually a very good service. And then I think SBC bought them out eventually. And then now the Prodigy brand name, I believe, is up for sale, and they pretty much, you know, are no longer existent. Same thing happened. CompuServe was the same way. It actually really went bad with CompuServe. AOL bought out CompuServe and basically just killed it. I mean, it was a program. I think my mom used it for a while. You get a CD. It says CompuServe. You install it. There was something called CompuServe 2000, and it basically looked just like AOL, but with CompuServe graphics and stuff. So, okay. Next up, I would like to talk about the Sierra Network, which later became known as the Imagination Network, and America Online. But first, I want to remind you about our website. You can access it at www.boringbeigebox.com. There are forums on there that you can jump on to discuss stuff like the online services. You just need to register first. Also, you can email me at podcast@boringbeigebox.com. Another little note I want to talk about is a podcast which inspired me by the name of Retro Bits. The information on Retro Bits is at www.retrobits.com. There's a great guy, his name is Earl Evans, who does the Retro Bits podcast. They cover an earlier time of retro computing from, I would say, about the mid to late 70s to the mid 80s. Also, they do some older stuff too, but he has a great podcast, and he definitely inspired me to do Boring Beige Box. Okay, moving on. The Sierra Network. This was my favorite. I really enjoyed the Sierra Network. I would say around a time about 1991 or 91, 92, I found out about the Sierra Network. I was at a friend's house. This was the same friend that had the IBM PS1 who had Prodigy. He also told me about something called Promenade, which actually was a service, online service, that was by the same people that made Quantum Link. It was basically the online service like Quantum Link for the PC. And the name of that was Promenade, which really, that also later became America Online. So he had Promenade, and he also had something called the Sierra Network. Now, the Sierra Network was an online service that was started by Sierra Online, the company that created the classic games like King's Quest, Space Quest, Police Quest, all the different Quest games. This was Ken Williams and Roberta Williams, a great team. They started in the early 80s, creating some of the most classic computer games. And so at this time, Sierra went on the online route. They decided to create the Sierra Network. Now, the Sierra Network, I would say, was definitely ahead of its time. You could get online, and you could play games with other people. They had backgammon, cribbage, chess, checkers, tons of different areas. Now, when you first dialed up, I can remember this like it was yesterday. When you install the software, when you create your persona, this was the first graphical online service. It was very much like a Sierra game. Everything was very cartoony. It used kind of the same interface. It used they have a scripting. It's called SCI. It's a scripting language that was created specifically for the King's Quest games. They used the same kind of engine, same kind of layout. Everything was like a Sierra game. So you could go in and create your own persona, give yourself a name, and the next screen, I remember, you would go in, and it would be, it was a cartoon kind of graphic, and there would be on the left-hand side, there was like a city, and there would be this like this link where you were at, and there'd be a satellite in the air, and then the mountains where it'd be like the, it's like the Sierra, where Sierra was located, which near, was near, right near the Sierra. And you, that was like their offices or whatever. So you would, when you're, you would hear your modem dial up with the, you know, the famous noises, and it would, you, it would show the connection, go to the satellite link and then down to their offices. And you were connected to the Sierra network. I remember so many times the software, or really the connection software, the handshaking and the modem connection, was kind of buggy. And you would always, you know, sometimes you would have problems connecting. So it was like, I just remember watching that screen and waiting patiently, like, oh, please, God, please connect, you know, I wanted to get on so bad. And, it was very difficult sometimes to get online with Sierra Network. Well, so many people wanted to get on. It was extremely popular. I remember with my first computer, I had a, I bought a 2400 baud modem, you know, extremely slow, modem, and I so badly wanted to get on the Sierra network. I remember hooking, I remember installing, it was an internal modem. I remember installing the modem into the computer, but the way my, it was a cheap computer, the way it was built, the motherboard didn't sit, wasn't set properly, and so the card wouldn't go all the way down into the slot firmly. I think what I did was, for some, I turned it on, and it just, it wouldn't work, it wouldn't dial up, but I could see that it was not all the way down into the slot. So I was so stupid. I don't know why I did this, but while the computer was on and Sierra Network was at the beginning, you know, the, I can remember it to this day. It was it, the intro screen, you know, where you create your persona. I unscrewed the modem and I pulled the modem out while the computer was on. Well, not knowing what would happen, I did this, and as soon as I pulled the card, the modem card out, it made a loud pop, and I saw sparks, and a cloud of smoke came up from the computer. It was the first and the only time that I've ever seriously damaged a computer. What happened was, it blew the modem, and it blew the I.O. card, and last show I talked about this. At the time, the computers had I.O. cards where all of the ID, the hard drive connections, floppy drive connections were on a card, a expansion card that was in a slot. It wasn't built onto the motherboard. So it blew that card and it blew the modem. So I had to go and get a replacement, and it was, I felt like I was, it was really embarrassing. But anyway, once you got past that connection point on the Sierra network, you were in. The screen that comes up, and if you want to look at this, a lot of the information I'm getting is from Wikipedia, which is www.wikipedia.org. That's WIKIPEDIA.ORG. It's a free online encyclopedia. It's I don't even search for stuff on Google anymore, because on Wikipedia you can find anything you're interested in. If you do a search on the Sierra Network or any of the online services I'm talking about today, you could do a search, and there's information about the different services. So under the Sierra network, there's a graphic picture of the GUI, the main interface, right when you get in. When you dial in, it's a town. It looks like you're in a small town. There is the post office that says mail at the top. There's a shop where you can do online shopping. There's a town hall. That's where you go. I believe that's where, I forget what was in the town hall, but you could go and get information, I think, about the system, or choose your settings, like your account settings and stuff like that. But the inn down at the bottom was where you go to chat. They had online chatting, chat rooms. That was really one of the first, like, graphical chat rooms. Like, you know, before that, obviously, was Quantum Link. But it had some great chat rooms in there. Sierra Land is where you could go and play all the different types of games. The cool thing was that depending on what season it was, like if it was winter, it would all be snowy. The whole, the first interface you'd see would all be covered in snow. And then spring, it would obviously be flowers and different things like that. So they always changed the front interface. It was really, really cool. And then at the very top there was, they implemented, later on, Larry Land, which is like casino games, and you had to be 18 and over for that. But I went in there, I don't know how I got around it, but I got in there anyway, and that's where all the cyber chats started, cyber sex, basically talking in a chat room or in a private message and just talking dirty to different people and stuff. And you'd always, you know, as a young teenage boy, always trying to find girls in there and stuff like that. But the problem is a lot of times those, what you thought were, was a girl was not really a girl. It's probably a guy. So, you know, we did that kind of stuff. That was in Larry Land, and you could play casino games and stuff like blackjack. And I'm looking at the graphic, and there was like a Colosseum in the middle, but I don't remember what the Colosseum was, if it was anything. But maybe you guys, somebody can write in and tell me what that was, or put it, post on the message board under online services. Talk about the Sierra Network. And then the greatest part of it, which I really got into it the most, was in the top right-hand corner, there was a volcano. That was Medieval Land. And that was the home of the Shadows of Eusebius. And also, later, it was an expansion pack called Twinian, The Fates of Twinian. And the later on, which I never played, which was The Ruins of Caldor or something like that. I don't know how to pronounce it exactly, but the Shadow of Eusebius was one of the first massively multiplayer online role-playing game. They call them now the MMORPG. This was before World of Warcraft and EverQuest. This is one of the very first online role-playing games. And the Shadow of Eusebius had a massive following. There was a lot of people that played that. I was definitely big into the Shadow of Eusebius. So let's talk a little bit about kind of the atmosphere in the Sierra Network. It was a combination. I think it was a combination of young people, older people, you know, from all different walks of life. It was the big pull of the Sierra Network was you could play games with each other. You could play, like I said, different kind of card games in real time against each other, and you could watch and see their moves. Like when you played checkers or played chess, you could see what they were doing. There was really nothing else like this out there, and the interface looked great. It was just a lot of fun, and like I said, it was launched in 1991. There was the chat rooms. This was my first real encounter. It was at this time. It was like the Sierra Network, and then it became America Online for me. But the chat rooms was what was a big pull. You know, you could see people's personas. You get into one big room together, and people are all talking at the same time. It was really that online community. Now, I know before that there was bulletin board systems, and online communities have been around for a long time. And this is 1991. I mean, bulletin boards have been around since the 80s, and people posted and stuff. But it was never as fast as what we have, you know, with the Sierra Network, and as graphical and as user-friendly. I remember, you know, the big thing was email. You know, emails looked like a letter. When you got an email, it was a cascade of letters that said who they were from and who it was to. You know, it was great reading an email. It would open up. It would look like a letter. It was very, very cool. The Shadow of Eusebius has, like I said, had a lot of following. There's a website, www.eusebius.org. That's YSERBIUS.org. And it's kind of like a community of people that are old school Eusebius players. They have really good forums on there. I'm pretty new to it. I found it just a couple weeks ago. And it looks like it's also a Ultima Online free server that they offer too. It's YSUO, Eusebius, Ultima Online. And I don't really know if they make it like Eusebius or what. But it's the big part of it, though, is the forums and talking about Eusebius and different things. They have screenshots on there. You can look and see, you know, and take you back to the day if you used to play Eusebius. They also, someone had created a classic version. It was basically written in Java where you could connect to Eusebius together and at least get into the chat rooms. I don't know if you could play together yet. But basically, they kind of reverse engineered the Eusebius client and wrote it in Java or something. But I would go on there to check out more about it. But you can download. Now, at the same time, Sierra Network released single-player versions of Shadow of Eusebius and The Fates of Twinian. So you could play it, go through and play it as a single player. And I think under download section on Eusebius.org, you could download the full single player. So check that out. It'll take you back to some of the good old days. Also, there is a project to recreate the Sierra Network. The address is www.fauxinn.com. Fauxinn.com. Fauxinn.com. This project has been going on for a while. There is a somewhat active forum. It really is not too active under the general discussion. But there's some serious guys here. They've been trying to recreate the Sierra Network client so that you could connect up and experience it like you did back in the day. I think where they're at is they were debating whether to do it all in Flash, and now they're trying to basically recreate the client in C++. It's very difficult because a lot of people, none of the original employees aren't really around anymore. They're hard to get in touch with. There's a real problem with the communication protocol and how it worked, and it's pretty difficult to get going. But I believe that there is some fun stuff you can check out on the download section. You can download the client in Flash and kind of go through the face maker and at least just kind of walk through and see what it looked like, and then it pretends like you're connecting, so you get to see that screen I talked about, and then it gets you to the main entrance or the main GUI where you see the town hall and the post office and all that. So, and it's kind of animated and stuff, so it kind of feels like the original. They also have the entire CD you can download with all the files on it and, you know, play around with it. And even Red Baron, the game that was real popular, Red Baron was a game on the Sierra Network where you could dogfight each other like World War II, you know, fighter planes. You can download that. So there's a little bit out there about Sierra Network, but not that much. It's really kind of died out, but there's still some old schoolers out there that still talk about it. The Sierra Network eventually was sold to AT&T, and it was renamed the Imagination Network. And it continued on until about 1996, I believe, and then it was shut down. You know, the reasoning was that it was just not making any money. It was it actually was losing subscribers. You know, once again, all of these online services really went downhill because of the advent of the internet and regular internet service providers. Everything switched over to the internet. You dialed up and you accessed web pages. The whole online service really kind of went away, and a lot of things that you could do, you just did them through the web. So it was a great service. I really enjoyed it. I had so much fun early days of high school, early 90s, playing on the Sierra Network. It was a great service, and I hope that the guys at Fauxinn.com can get things going, or someone out there, a community going, and kind of recreate the Sierra Network like the guys with Quantum Link. Look up Quantum Link, and there should be a link on Wikipedia for Quantum Link Reloaded. They recreated everything with Quantum Link. I can actually run a Commodore 64 emulator, connect up to Quantum Link through my internet connection, and actually chat in the People Connection chat rooms. And it's amazing. So I really wish that they would, you know, I wish the community out there would kind of get things together and recreate the Sierra Network. It would definitely be a lot of fun. Okay, moving on. America Online started out as Quantum Link. The things that you saw in America Online later on really started in Quantum Link. There was the People Connection. Over time, that became America Online. Now, the thing about AOL is once the internet came around, the web really became popular, people that used America Online were looked at as idiots, as your typical, you know, housewife or, you know, clueless, you know, person that didn't know a lot about computers. It was easy to get on America Online, and that was their goal. America Online was meant for people that didn't know a whole lot about computers, but they just wanted to get online. For me, I mean, I already knew a lot about computers. I used it because it was becoming very popular. The big reason for me for using AOL and a lot of, I think, young teenage boys at the time was obviously for chatting, online chatting, but a big thing was wares, which is, you know, illegal software or software piracy, whatever you want to call it. There was a lot of trading going on. There was a whole it was kind of where, and it's funny how all of this stuff went on way before AOL. Back in the 80s with bulletin board systems, there were pirate bulletin board systems where people traded software that they didn't pay for, and this has been going on for a long time. America Online is when I would say the masses began to converge on some of this stuff. Every teenage boy wanted to get his hands on the latest games. You know, he couldn't. The teenage boy could not afford to pay $50 for the latest game or whatever was out there. Now, a lot of people, they didn't even care about the games. They just wanted to collect everything and have credibility. And so the whole AOL Wares scene was really, really popular. There's, if you search in Google for AOL Wares, there is an article out there, I think, talking about the whole scene. And it was really kind of cheesy. I mean, you know, there's guys that were really into it, and then there's all the kiddies that really were into it on AOL and stuff. So it's kind of funny looking back. But I remember at this time, I mean, I'm connecting at 2400 bauds, 2400 BPS, maybe 9600 BPS later. This was extremely slow. I remember taking, I think I remember downloading a demo file of King's Quest VI. I think it was 10 megabytes, and it took me, I would probably say, an entire day to download this file. I think 8 hours or more, 8 to 12 hours it took. I remember always setting my computer, if I knew that I was downloading a large file. Now, the other thing is with the Wares stuff, people would email you. You could say, you know, you put your name in a chat room or whatever, and it would automatically email you the files that you needed. So my email box would be filled with, you know, whatever the game was, broken up into multiple files, smaller, you know, 10 megabyte segments or 5 megabyte segments. And then when you unzip the files, you combine them all together, and then you can install the game or install the program. I remember that if I was trying to download a large file, I would set it at night, right when my parents would go to bed, and make sure that I would be done before 8 a.m. when my dad got up to go to work. So because the line, it would keep the line busy. So my mom would always be like, oh, if we ever get a call, you know, if it's an emergency, they won't be able to get through because it'll keep ringing busy. And this is the time before, like, I don't know if we had call waiting or not. I guess we didn't because it ran busy. So if someone tried to call, the phone would be busy and I would be online for hours. And especially if I did this after school or, you know, around lunch, around dinner time, my mom would get really mad at me. I mean, it was numerous times I would pray that she would not pick up the phone while I was downloading something because it would ruin the download. I'd have to start all over, and she would get pissed. I mean, you know, you pick up the phone and you hear the crazy noises, and I would get in a lot of trouble for that. So during that time, I also dialed up to a lot of BBSs. This was early 90s. There was not very many good local BBSs. I grew up in North Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, small town, not a whole lot of BBSs. So I kept looking for the pirate boards, you know, to find games and files and stuff. I started to dial up the long distance bulletin boards, and one month I did it way too much, and I got that phone bill, and I had a $500 phone bill. And this is when I was in high school. I didn't make hardly any money. So when they got that phone bill, I was in big trouble. It took me months to pay that off. The phone bill was like an inch thick. When you're young like that, the seduction of the bulletin board systems were out there. Those long distance, you know, ones in New York that had all the files, all the games you could think of, you just were tempted. You had it right there. You could dial up and you could get whatever you wanted. So yeah, it was pretty crazy. But anyway, America Online was great. A lot of great chat rooms. Every like company had their own section, or, you know, you could go, there was a game section and they had, you know, nightly meetings. I have never found the same kind of community. I think that now on the internet or on the web, there's a lot of message board communities, and there are communities that are driven around different websites and stuff. There's a podcasting community. There's different communities that are out there, but the idea of America Online and some of the chat communities and the chat room moderators, I think, was really strong. They had a lot of they had celebrities on at certain times of the day or at night. Like, I remember going into a chat room like the Star Trek section and having different, some of the original cast members that would be in there and they would be chatting with you, you know, scheduled times that you could ask them questions. I don't see any of that anymore, that kind of stuff, where they had scheduled, you know, chat sessions. There was, like in the game section, you could have, there were certain nights that they would talk about, you know, computer games, and it was a real community of people, and I just don't see that much anymore. The only kind of communities I see, really, I play World of Warcraft somewhat, and there's a real good guild communities. You know, different guilds have good communities, but they're all focused on the game, and you know, you really don't just chat about regular, you know, day-to-day stuff. So, but you know, there's some communities out there, but just not as much as it seemed like it was in the early days. The other part of AOL which really drew me was the online game Neverwinter Nights. Neverwinter Nights was also one of the early massively multiplayer online role-playing games. Neverwinter Nights was built by a company called SSI, and they did the whole series of Gold Box Dungeons and Dragons, Advanced Dungeons and Dragons computer games in the 80s. Neverwinter Nights was the premier game on America Online. This is early 90s. Basically, the idea was you go into a certain section of America Online, you download the Neverwinter Nights client, you install it on your machine, you connect to it through America Online. Neverwinter Nights ran from 1991 to 1997. I remember playing this game a lot. It was very addictive, and a lot of people played it. There were so many people that played it, most of the time you couldn't get connected. I think the server only held 500 people, but there was tons of people playing it that could never get in. There was a charge at the time. The game originally cost $6 per hour to play. People paid that, $6 an hour to play this game. It was incredible. I really, really enjoyed this game. The idea was, you know, you group together with people, you explore the world of, this is for in the Forgotten Realms world of Dungeons and Dragons. You go on quests, kill monsters. I mean, it was your typical online role-playing game. So that was Neverwinter Nights. It was a great game. Definitely check it out online. I think you can download the original client and play around with it. It's definitely a lot of fun to check out. Well, that about wraps up our show on online services. I'm glad that you joined me today, and I hope you come back next week. So check out our website, www.boringbeigebox.com. Jump on the forums, or you can shoot me an email at podcast@boringbeigebox.com. Thanks, and have a great week.